quick warning to listeners, this story acknowledges the existence of sex.
To understand this referendum, you first need a little background on Georgia's JQC and just how aggressive it's been at going after judges. More than anyone, the person who probably embodies the boldness and zeal of the mission is Richard Hyde. Hyde is a commission member. He was their paid investigator for a decade. I've heard him describe himself as the point of the spear and, once at a legislative hearing under oath, the turd in the punch bowl. When I asked him about the 60 judges that had resigned, and that seemed like a lot, he shrugged.
Georgia judges are no different than judges around the country. What is different is the way we investigate judges.
Judges are powerful people, but Hyde is not easily intimidated. He used to be a street cop. Back then, he would tow the cars of state lawmakers who had double parked near the state capitol. Once, he shot an escaped chimpanzee who was attacking people on a street. He felt bad about that. In the Atlanta school testing scandal, where teachers were doctoring students' test scores, it was Hyde who got an elementary school teacher to wear a wire, which broke the whole thing open. One news story quoted someone saying they would rather have a wasting disease than to be investigated by Hyde. He's just so relentless. But Hyde says the JQC is not out to get judges. They're just trying to protect the public. If a judge slips up, they try to work things out. Here's an example of that. When I went to interview Hyde, he'd brought along a transcript of a case they'd had to look into. It's a murder case, and the defendant is refusing to use a lawyer. Just refusing. Starts actually swearing at the judge, using profanity. The judge tries to reason with him, and then this happens. I had Hyde read this part.
The judge, listen to me. The defendant, f*** you. Listen to me. The defendant, go f*** yourself. The judge, I'm finding you in contempt of court. I don't care. I know you don't. And I sentence you to 20 days for that. And if you say anything else, I'm going to add 20 days for everything you say. The defendant, f*** you. The judge, 40 days. The defendant, f*** you again. 60 days. The defendant, go f*** yourself. The judge, a year. The defendant, your mama. The judge, 10 years. The defendant, f*** my d***. The judge, you know something? This is going to be an interesting trial.
The defendant threatens to kill the judge's family, and the judge just kind of loses it. When the defendant says he's going to masturbate in court, the judge says, why don't you do that right now? Do it now. Do it now. Hyde says the judge had a stellar record before this. So the JQC, when it heard about it, did what it often does. It had the judge in for a little talk to discuss what had happened and how to avoid it again. They publicly reprimanded him, and the judge went back to being a judge. But Hyde says there are more extreme cases, like the time a judge, in court, took a gun out and told the witness she was, quote, killing her case and might as well shoot her lawyer. And then there was this other time. An attorney said that a judge hearing her case had sexually harassed her, at one point leaving her a phone message in which he, the judge, identified himself as Santa Claus and said the following, hey, 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 little girl, want to sit on Santa's face? The woman gave the recording of that message to Richard Hyde, and Hyde went out to talk to the judge.
I met with him at his courthouse, and he's got an office full of people doing whatever it was going on. And I identified myself and asked him if we could talk in private. So we walked outside, and I'm asking him questions about, have you ever sexually harassed any of the women in front of you? Did you ever make any sexual demands? Did you ever leave a message on somebody's voicemail inappropriately? He denied all of that. So I said, well, then we have a problem because somebody's lying to me. Either the complainant or you are lying. So we sat in my truck and I played the recording and he listened to it.
What was his reaction when you played him the voicemail? He just told you he didn't do it.
He became very emotional. He wept. He walked in his office, got a piece of stationery out, and hand wrote a letter to the governor resigning and agreeing never to be a judge again.
Before we get to why some in the legislature wanted to dismantle and remake the JQC, it's interesting to see how badly they wanted to change it. This is not an easy thing to do. In Georgia, like in a lot of states, the Judicial Qualifications Commission, this entity with the power to remove judges for unethical behavior, is written into the Constitution. One lawyer who helped put it there, this was back in the 70s, told me it was put in the Constitution expressly to avoid political tampering. People make a basic separation of powers argument. Keep the JQC independent. If lawmakers got their hands on it, they might pressure JQC members to drop cases against their friends or go after a judge they don't like. But this past January, one Friday afternoon, House Resolution 1113 was introduced, a bill proposing an amendment to the Constitution that would abolish the JQC and allow lawmakers to remake it however they saw fit. Lester Tate, at the time a member of the JQC, says he'd pulled into his driveway when someone called with the news. Tate was furious. It seemed like a straight-up power grab. He told me he saw H.R. 1113 as an act of war.
Clearly it was. You know, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, we had no knowledge that it was coming. Nothing's been said about this to anybody, and then all of a sudden you introduce a bill, you know, like this. I think it's pretty clear that a sneak attack has been launched.
It's not quite as bad as Pearl Harbor.
Well, no ships were sunk in the process, but the analogy, I think, still holds true.
There's one little detail worth pointing out here. It gets mentioned in a lot of the local news coverage. One of the sponsors of the bill is a representative named Johnny Caldwell. Before being a lawmaker, Caldwell was a judge. The judge who was accused of leaving the Santa Claus sit on my face voicemail. Representative Caldwell declined our request for an interview.
Secretary will read H.R. 1113.
House Resolution 1113 by Representative Wallace.
Altering the Constitution is a big deal. For starters, any proposed change has to be approved by two-thirds of the House and two-thirds of the Senate. Then the voters have to approve it as well. Republicans introduced the measure, and they had the votes in the House. But in the Senate, it was tight. If all the Republicans voted for it, the bill would pass. But here they had a problem, a man named Josh McCoon. McCoon is a Republican who seems to enjoy not voting Republican sometimes. He's loved politics since he was a kid. Favorite president, Calvin Coolidge. McCoon is chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he thought taking the JQC out of the Constitution, letting politicians remake it however they wanted, sounded like a terrible idea.
And I just remember somebody mentioning, hey, this is coming up, and I kind of dismissed it because it seemed so absurd.
Chair recognizes item 29.
Thank you, Mr. President.
This is McCoon on one of the last nights of the legislative session for the year. The bill at this point has failed to pass once, but it's coming up for another vote. McCoon doesn't shout. His tone is more, seriously?
It's just really hard to wrap my brain around the fact that we are going to do this. We ought to think long and hard before we say we're going to abolish the independent constitutional agency that has overseen judicial ethics in this state for the last four decades.
McCoon is particularly upset about how the legislature would remake the JQC. The JQC has seven members, and lawmakers want to give the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate the power to pick four of the seven seats. Currently, they pick zero. I looked into what other states do. According to the Center for Judicial Ethics, only one state gives lawmakers the power to pick a majority of its JQC members.
We are taking literally the only bright spot in the network of ethics and conflict of interest laws in state government, and we are throwing them in the garbage. And for what?
McCoon began to suspect that this was all about personal gripes, or lawmakers who were friends with judges who the JQC had investigated. The Speaker of the House, in particular, seemed unusually determined to overhaul this little commission. This became very clear in the final days of the session. Time was running out to pass the bill. McCoon says he and the other Republican senators got pulled into this urgent meeting.
We were told that the Speaker had made it clear if we did not pass the JQC constitutional amendment, that he would, quote, shut the building down, meaning the House would not consider any Senate legislation.
Until the JQC got passed.
Correct.
2 days before the end of the session, it's after 9 p.m., the bill comes up for a final vote.
The committee has agreed to. All those in favor, vote aye. Those opposed, no. Secretary will unlock the machine.
A minute later, the bill narrowly passes. If you look at the breakdown, you can see what happened. One Democrat crossed party lines and voted in favor. A woman named Donzella James. She declined to talk with us, but a newspaper reporter who was in the room, Greg Bluestein with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, says it was totally clear what had happened. Republicans had made a trade. They'd offered to support a bill that she'd been trying to get through for years to turn the area where she lived into a city. The bill was to put a referendum on the ballot about it. Bluestein says he knows this trade happened because a Republican at this point walked up and just started narrating what was going on.
He said, "She stuck with us, now we'll stick with her." So there was no effort to hide that there was horse trading going on here.
Like, you watched it happen.
Oh, literally watched it happen and had people openly talk about it.
In case there was any doubt, the very next bill brought up was for the city referendum, which passed easily. Lawmakers were willing to create a city to get control of the JQC. If you're wondering why this was such a priority, why the Speaker of the House seemed so determined to push this through, Josh McCoon, the Republican, wondered that too. So he asked around.
You know, why is this such a high profile? Why is this thing moving so quickly? And the answer was, this is a priority of the Speaker of the House. And then when you would say, well, why does he care about the functioning of the JQC? It was, well, this all goes back to his conflict with the state bar.
The state bar. This takes a little explaining, but stick with me. The Speaker has a long-standing, very heated feud with the state bar. The bar has filed charges against him that could get him disbarred. I've read some of the back and forth. It sounds like people yelling at each other in the most formal language possible. Like, it is clear that absurdity is no prohibition on the actions of the state bar. What does all this have to do with the JQC? The bar currently gets to appoint 3 members of the JQC. If these changes go through, the bar will get 0. To McCoon, it looked like revenge. The House Speaker declined to comment. This is the story I initially heard, at least, about how petty politics, personal gripes, and a Santa Claus voicemail were threatening to gut an institution that was doing its job and doing it quite well. It's the kind of story that one side of an issue tells itself all the time, I think. And when you hear something like that, it can be hard to imagine any other version. But of course, there is another side. And on that side, another story involving the very same events. So come with me. Let's cross over to that other side. Let's try to get to the bottom of this one ballot measure in one state.
I am here so that the JQC never again abuses its power to the detriment of those who serve and the public we all serve.
This is Cynthia Becker testifying at a recent hearing before lawmakers. Until recently, she was a judge. And in the alternate narrative of this story, she's the main character.
I heard with dismay a former director testify last week. Between 2010 and 2014, 50 judges were removed. We are not trophies. We are not scalps. That's not a good start.
Becker was investigated by the JQC and was visibly furious about how it all went down. She says she was called in to talk to JQC members about some complaint, but she wasn't told what it was. Turns out there was a question about whether she had denied somebody bail, a former school superintendent who ended up spending 4 days in jail. She says when she got to the JQC, one of the members just started yelling at her.
One commission member was so over the top that if he had conducted himself that way in a courtroom, deputies would have escorted him out of the courtroom. He was standing, he was red-faced, he was pointing his finger at me, lecturing me.
Who was that?
That was Mr. Tate. He was
Lester Tate, the commission member you heard comparing the JQC bill to the attack on Pearl Harbor. According to notes from that meeting, at one point, Judge Becker started weeping. The whole thing, she says, was recorded without her knowledge. Another judge who testified said that the same JQC member, Lester Tate, behaved improperly in his court. According to an affidavit by a court clerk, Tate, quote, turned bright red all over and got extremely upset. A month later, Richard Hyde, the crusading investigator you heard at the beginning of the story, showed up demanding to see documents. A court clerk wrote, quote, he was questioning me like a drill sergeant in the army. He almost brought me to tears. I have never had anyone treat me like this. The judge, Mitchell Scoggins, says Hyde then went through his things.
And the reason I know he did is because we pulled our security camera video and we could see Mr. Hyde in there with my clerk, just those two people, going through paperwork on my desk. And I didn't appreciate that. I didn't like that at all.
Lester Tate denies doing anything wrong in either case. In fact, he's resigned in protest over this whole effort to remake the JQC. Richard Hyde told me things did get heated when he came by court that day. But here's what he said about searching that judge's desk.
I looked through the papers on the public bench. Yes, that is not his bench. That bench belongs to the people of this state. Those documents belong to the people of this state. They were in plain view. They looked out of place, and I looked through them. I make no apologies for that.
Richard Hyde has publicly said that the JQC owes a couple judges an apology for how their cases were handled, but just a couple. Which of those judges who stepped down do you really want back on the bench, he asks. Most of the complaints, he says, are just from a few people.
Those are the five empty beer cans in the back of a pickup truck going down a dirt road.
Hyde was quick to say that the vast majority of judges do a fine job under difficult circumstances. But he says sitting up there in that black robe with the gavel, it can go to some people's heads.
People stand up when they walk in the room. They stand up when they leave. They bring them coffee. They laugh at their dumb jokes. They tell them how smart, thin, tall, and funny they are. It's black robe syndrome is what I call it.
One way to summarize the criticism of the JQC is that some of its members have fallen prey to their own version of black robe syndrome. After all, there is the power of being a judge, but then there is the power of judging the judges. Even after hearing these stories, it wasn't clear to me why lawmakers felt the need to amend the Constitution and give themselves control over the JQC. I didn't see how that would fix whatever problems there were. As I've said, the Speaker of the House wouldn't talk. Neither would the representative who allegedly left the Santa Claus voicemail. So I found someone else.
I'm Wendell Willard. I'm a state representative, state of Georgia.
Willard is a Republican, chair of the House Judiciary Committee. He's socially progressive, co-sponsored a bill recently to protect LGBT employees from workplace discrimination, but he's conservative on a lot of other stuff. Willard was actually the author of the bill, so I asked him to tell me his version of all this. He said it begins with Amanda Williams. Amanda Williams, the drug court judge that we did an hour show on, who stepped down after a JQC investigation. Willard says what really troubled him is that it didn't stop there.
The next thing we're reading about is there's an indictment being taken out against Judge Williams. So I said, wow, she must have really done something pretty drastic to have a felony indictment.
I looked this up. What she'd done, according to the indictment, was lie to the JQC. It's a felony offense with possible jail time.
Is your position basically like maybe it was correct that she stepped down for what she did, but the idea that she would...
I'm not concerned about her stepping down. It's the process, what I call the due process.
Willard says these judges think they're coming in for an informal conversation. So it seems unfair to him that they can get charged with a felony if they misremember or misstate something. He says the whole point of these meetings is to try to work things out. Most judges just need a little counseling, like the judge who imploded under a barrage of F-bombs. If every judge who goes to talk to the JQC has to worry about being charged with a felony, what judge would ever come talk to them? He says the same thing that happened to Amanda Williams also happened to Judge Becker, the one who said she was yelled at and recorded without her knowledge. She later faced six felony charges for making false statements in that meeting. The charges were dropped, but in the end, she had to promise not to be a judge again. The JQC has changed its policy since then. It no longer records its meetings with judges. But Becker said she felt sucker-punched by the whole thing.
That is one segment of the concern that was growing.
Is that reason enough to, like, dismantle the whole JQC?
I didn't say that was a reason alone, did I? We're not trying, and it's not a dismantling. I keep hearing that term used by the press. It is a reconstituting of the JQC, and to do so is going to require a constitutional amendment.
I asked about the vote trading in the Senate. He said, I don't know. That's the Senate side. I look back at my paper. What else you got, he says.
What else you got?
Yeah, I got a list.
Find something important you want to talk about.
Okay. There are people who say the reason this was put in the Constitution was to keep it out of the hands of politicians, and you're undoing that.
It's still in the Constitution. It's a constitution-created body.
Yeah, but the Constitution used to spell out how the people were appointed.
We feel there's a way that has to be changed that will improve upon that.
Which is to give the legislature power over more seats?
Give the legislature the right to make necessary changes. You know, the legislature is made up of the people who elect them. We're not some animal out here, and we create other agencies and bodies all the time.
I can see how Willard sees things. He thinks the JQC needs bigger fixes, and he figures, who better to fix it than us lawmakers? People voted us into office. We are the people's representatives. And voters will have the final say. This is going to be on the ballot next month, so people will have to decide which of these stories makes more sense to them. Or maybe they'll just hear one of the stories. That will make the decision easier. Frankly, I can't imagine most voters even know what the JQC is. This referendum is not an example of democracy at its finest, though it's probably a pretty good example of how democracy actually is.
Dave Kestenbaum is one of the producers of our program.